Okay, good morning. So unfortunately, I misplaced my memory stick last week, and I'm now taking the slides off the web today, and for some reason the full screen mode doesn't seem to be working on the browser here, and I just tried to fix it and I didn't manage to in the time just before the lecture. So I've got it as large as I can for the display. Anyway, these are the lecture notes from last Tuesday, so hopefully you've still got a copy of them in front of you. It's still large enough, I think, to read, and we'll be going on today to the lecture notes that are at the back this morning. Right, so last Tuesday, I started doing querying a relational database, and we looked at this theoretical language for querying a relational database, relational algebra, and we've just got a few slides to cover to finish the basic operators from relational algebra. And what we ended on last time was what's called the cross product of two tables of two relations in relational algebra, and that was this one where we put the two schemas side by side, and then we put in the cross product table, we put all pairs of tuples from each of the two component tables that make up the cross product table. And I ended last time by saying that there's a slight problem that arises here, because we get what's called a naming conflict, and here we see that there are two different columns in the resulting table, both called name, and that's not allowed in a relational schema, to have two different columns with the same name. And I mentioned two different ways of avoiding that last time. One was called prefix names, and the other one was called positional names. And I said that there's a third option, and that's what we're going to begin with today. And the third option is just to, rather than forming the cross product in such a way that you get these naming conflicts arising, the alternative you can do is to rename one or both of the tables before you do the cross product. And that's done by this renaming operator. I'm not going to go through the general form in detail. You can read the details offline, but the important thing is it's an operator. So as with all operators, it's got a symbol, and again, it's a Greek letter. This is the lowercase Greek letter rho for renaming. We apply it to an argument, which is a relation, or equivalently a table. So that's the original relation name here, specifying the relation. And we also give it this data in a subscript, which is a new relation name, together with a list of renamings that we're going to apply. The new relation name is, if we're renaming the name of the table we're applying the operation to, and the list of renamings is to rename the fields of the table. So here we see an example, and we see here we're applying the renaming operator rho to the students table. We're giving it a resulting relation name, that's S, so the students table now becomes S. And we're saying, well, we're going to rename it, and we're going to rename the matriculation number field SID, standing for student ID, and the email we're going to rename address. Not really a very sensible renaming field name for an email address, because address could be also a physical address. But in any case, this illustrates what happens when we apply a renaming operator. And we're also allowed to leave either this S component here empty, or the list of field renamings empty, in which case anything we don't specify just stays as it was. So if we hadn't said S here, then the resulting table would have still been called students. So that's maybe a little bit of information to add to the bottom of the slides here, if you've got your notes from last time, that if either of the components is empty, then the default is just taken not to apply a renaming to that component. And so when we rename, we can, for example, perform the cross product by, if we look at this one, we can rename, apply this renaming operation, and again, you might jot this down in the notes, you can apply the renaming operation to the table S1 so that the, well, actually, what we would need to do in this case, the problem here is the course is the field name here, which occurs in both. So one alternative here, and I'll write this on the board. So instead of forming the cross product as we've done on this slide, we instead would form, for example, the cross product of rename. We can still call it S1, but we'll rename the field name to student name. Apply that to S1, and then cross-product the resulting table with R. And in this case, the schema we get in the end, so the new schema of this, of the cross-product, is now the matriculation number. Name in the S1 table has been renamed to student name. And then everything else as before. So age, email, code, and name. So we're keeping this one the same. It might be tasteful to rename this name also to be course name so that you can understand what the different components of the field are. But that's not essential to avoid the naming conflict. We've already avoided the naming conflict here. And the last component was year. Okay. So maybe because, as before, yes?
Is the order of the cross product?
Well, the order of the cross product only matters in that the order of the fields you get in the resulting table are in the order that you give the components to the cross product. So if you gave it the other way around, you would get those fields in the opposite order. But, well, in the order with the one on the left and the other on the left. But, of course, the tables you get are equivalent. So it doesn't matter in the sense of the kind of table information you get in the table. Right, so that's renaming. And there's just one other operation we're going to look at, in three different forms. Now, in a sense, we don't need to look at this operation on its own because it's a defined operation, defined in terms of the operations we've already introduced. But we will look at it, and it's important to look at it because it is, in some ways, the most important operator in relational algebra. This is the operation that's used to form all the queries that are useful in practice. And this is called the join operation. And it has this sort of bow tie kind of symbol here with a subscript P, where again the P is a predicate. And the format for the join is, well, remember that with all the operations we were saying when we could apply them. So a union, for example, or an intersection required that the two relations that we were giving to the operation had what we called compatible schemas. In this case, just like the cross product, we can apply them to arbitrary tables. And the schema that you get as a result is, again, the schema of the cross product. But the difference between the cross product and the join is that the join doesn't give you all the entries in the cross product, but it selects out those entries that satisfy the predicate. And of course, it's easiest to see this with an example. Maybe just for the moment, I'll put both projectors back on. So it's easiest to see this with an example. So here, we're again combining the students table and the takes table with the takes relationship. But we're now saying, what the join allows us to say is, we're only interested in some rows of that table of the cross product that satisfy a property that we're going to specify. And in this case, the property we're specifying is that the matriculation number in the students table coincides with the matriculation number in the takes table. And you see here I'm using this prefix notation, which is the one that people typically use in practice to avoid. So here we've got a potential, well, we've got a naming conflict because there are two matriculation numbers, and I'm avoiding that by referring to this one as students MN and this one but as takes.mn. So this is what are called prefix names that I talked about in the last lecture. So we see in grey here, in the background, this is the whole of the cross product, but what the join does is it just selects out those rows that satisfy this property. So the matriculation number from the students table has to agree with the matriculation number in the component that comes from the takes table. And the reason that this is such an important operation is because this kind of property, being able to constrain the rows so that two fields agree or satisfy some relationship, is exactly what one wants in order to extract information from the database. So this is illustrating, for example, this would be, and we're going to see examples of this later in the lecture, this would be a useful thing to do if we want to look at the courses that this student Mary here takes. Well, how are we going to get access to the courses? Well, we need to get the information about Mary from the students table. Ultimately, we're going to get the information about the courses from the courses table, but we want to find a way of finding those courses that she takes. That information is in the takes table, and to get it, we need to say, well, we're only interested in those rows for Mary, we're only interested in those rows of the table that are about her. So that's why we restrict to those rows of the cross product where the two matriculation numbers agree. Okay, so we see here that the schema of this join is, as I said, the schema of the cross product. As I said, there's a naming conflict here, and we avoid the naming conflict by using the prefix notation. So this field we're calling students.mn, and this field we're calling takes.mn. But this kind of join that this illustrates is an example of a very commonly occurring kind of join where we're constraining the rows we're selecting are exactly those where one field agrees with another field. And these are called equijoins. And you see in this case, when we have such a specification, we're requiring this field to agree with this field, it's a little bit pointless to include both fields twice. So what we're going to look at now is a variation of this, which we use the same notation for, because in practice we don't distinguish, called an equijoin, and in which we don't incorporate both fields twice. So that is talked about on this slide, but again I'm going to really just look at it with the example, and I'm afraid for that we'll use the blackboard again. So the equijoin is because we're saying we're just interested in the table where the matriculation numbers coincide from the two tables. The equijoin says, well, we don't need those two fields from the which would be separate fields in the cross product table. So instead, the resulting schema is then the matriculation number from the student's table, name, age, email. And now we don't have the matriculation number from the takes table because this is the one we know the information in that would agree with the matriculation number here. So we don't have that one, the code and the mark. Okay? And in fact, this is such a commonly occurring query, this when it's in exactly this form. So notice this has avoided the naming conflict. But it's a very, very common form of an equijoin. So we're specializing, in a sense, the join to a common form, the equijoin. But there's a common form of the equijoin, which again, this is an example of, which is when the equality you're giving is between two fields that have the same name in the different tables, as they did here, because we were looking at, so the equijoin was students, this bow tie symbol, and it was students dot mn equals takes dot mn takes. But because both of these are called the matriculation number, they both got the same field name, this is also called a natural join. So this is also a natural join. So in practice, when we write this using relational algebra, we write this just as students bow tie symbol takes. And the way you interpret this, if there's no predicate, is you interpret this as we're joining these two tables and we're constraining any field name that agrees with a field name here to be equal. So whenever you have, you require that when you have field names here that are the same here, they should have the same types so that we can ask them to be equal. And then we're requiring those field names to be equal. And the schema we give is the one that omits those duplicate field names from the second table, just as it is here. Okay, so that's basically the end of the material on relational algebra. But I just want to go back to two points about relational algebra that I talked about last time. Well, one is that, as I said last time, one of the advantages of relational algebra is it's a procedural language for querying. That means every operation has an associated algorithm that the database can perform in order to give you the table that the operation should, that should be the result of the operation. So in the case of join, there's a very natural operation here, which is, well, cross product the two tables. We know how to do that. We just make the schema that we need for the cross product. We just combine all the rows of one table with the other, then go through all the rows and select out those that satisfy the predicate. But in practice, that would be a very efficient, very inefficient way of doing it, because if you've got large tables, you construct a huge table, the cardinality of which is the product of the argument tables, and then you'd need to go through this huge table selecting out the rows. So there are more efficient ways of doing it, such as going through each row of the first table. They're more space-efficient ways. You don't ever build the large table. You go through all the rows of the first table, and for each row, you then look at all the corresponding, all the rows of the second table and combine them to see which ones satisfy the predicate before building it up. But anyway, so that's an argument for treating join as an operation in its own right in terms of implementation. And I'm saying that because one thing I didn't mention, well, I mentioned that it's a derived operator. I didn't say how. So in fact, from a theoretical point of view, if you're not interested in implementing the operation in a natural way, from a theoretical point of view, you can define the join operation like this, as first cross product the two tables and then select on the predicate that you're giving. Okay, but from an implementation point of view, it's better to consider join as a primitive operation in its own right. And also, in any case, as I said, it's one of the most useful operations in relational algebra for constructing queries. Right, so that completes the relational algebra. And for the second half of the lecture, what I'm going to do is look at another theoretical query language. And this is called tuple relational calculus. And like relational algebra, tuple relational calculus has a long history to it. It was introduced by Codd in his fundamental paper where he introduced the relational model of databases. And in that paper, the main result was showing that relational algebra is equivalent to this language that I'm now going to talk about called tuple relational calculus. But the interesting feature of tuple relational calculus that contrasts it with relational algebra is that instead of being a procedural language, it's what's called a declarative language. That is, whereas in relational algebra every operation had an associated algorithm, this is how we can implement the operations on the computer. In tuple relational calculus, rather than saying this is how we want to construct the resulting table, what we say instead is we just specify this is the information we want, I'm not going to tell you how to find it. So it's a nice thing to be able to do, because it's nice to be able to, if you want to extract some information from a database, it's nice to be able to say, well, I want to know this, but not to have to worry yourself about how the database system is going to go and find it. And if you've got a clever database system, it should be able to work out how to find it for you. So that's the idea of, and I'm going to say a little bit more about this at the end of the lecture. The idea of tuple relational calculus is to have this mechanism for saying what the data we want to get is, rather than how to get it. Now, the basic format here of tuple relational calculus is based on something called predicate logic, which you have covered to some degree, and we're not going to go into any more depth, really, in predicate calculus in the computation and logic course last semester. So we're going to see the predicate logic in a moment, but first I'm going to just introduce the basic idea of a query in tuple relational calculus. Now remember, the idea is we want to say what information we want to extract from the database without saying how we're going to find it. So we do this by writing a query like this. So the query says, I want those tuples t. So t is what's called a tuple variable. So it ranges over tuples, that's rows of a table. So you're building a table as a result consisting of the rows that you're specifying here. So it says, I want those tuples t that such that they satisfy the property p. So p is going to be some property that expresses properties of tuples. And you can see when the tuple evaluates to true, but when that property evaluates a tuple to true, or when it evaluates it to false. Okay, so the easiest way to understand it is to just see it done. So see plenty of queries, illustrative queries, showing how we're going to use tuple relational calculus. So here's a simple query, and so I think for the whole of this lecture, I'm going to be using I'll just remind you what the schemas are. So the schemas for the main tables we're going to be using are the students table, the courses table, and the takes table. And I just need to remind myself as well. So the students table, matriculation number, name, age, and email. The courses, matriculation number, code of the course taken, and the mark. Oh, hang on. That's the takes relationship. That's the takes table. So the courses is the code of the course, the name, and the year. So this is going to be useful to have this to look at in order to understand what the queries are doing. So the matriculation number, the code, and the mark. Right. Let's pop that up. Okay, so with that information to refer to, now what we can do is understand this simple query here. So it's saying, return those tuples S where S belongs to the students' table. So that's specifying the schema of the tuples that we're returning. S belongs to the students' table, so S will be ranges over tuples that satisfy this schema, so they have four components: the matriculation number, name, age, and email. And we're constraining those fields that we're returning to be those tuples in which the age component is greater than 18, strictly greater here. So that means we're returning those students, those rows of the students table, where the age is at least 19. Okay, so that's a very simple example. And obviously you can see, in any case, how you would compute this query. You just look through the students table and compare all the age fields and see if they're greater than 19. So it's easy to see how one would compute this. But that's not the point of tuple relational calculus. The point is we're just saying in a very neat way, this is the information we want. We want tuples that have the schema of the students table and where the age field is greater than 18. The more complicated queries that we're going to look at, the algorithm for extracting the information is not going to be so obvious. So here's the formal syntax of these queries. So the queries are built up from something. What we're talking about here is how we build the predicate component. That's, if I go back two slides, that's this component that says, expresses the property we want the tuples to satisfy. And that's built up from atomic formulas of the form saying a relational tuple, a tuple variable is in a given table that specifies its schema, or saying something like this field equals that field, and other things like, or this field is greater than 18, or other things like this. So these are the basic components, and we build them up using the building blocks of first order logic. So the building blocks of first order logic are those of propositional logic from the computation and logic course last semester. So we have not, and, or an implication. This is not quite the notation that was used in the computation and logic course, but the notation I'm giving here is the notation that coincides with the database management systems book. So if you want to look at the reference on tuple relational calculus there. And in addition to propositional logic, we have the other components from predicate logic, and those are called the quantifiers. So the quantifiers are exists, saying there exists a tuple satisfying a property, and for all, saying for all tuples, a certain property is satisfied. Right, so basically what I'm going to do for the rest of the lecture is show some example queries and explain, and we'll look at ever more complicated queries and we'll see how they express the property that I'm claiming they express. Now here's a subtle point, but I think I'm going to explain this subtle point. It's there for you to read. I'm going to explain this using the example here, the next example of a query. So here, we're computing a slightly more complicated query. We're looking at those tuples P for which there exists some student, that's a tuple from the students table, whose age is greater than 20, strictly greater than 20, and we're saying that the name of P should be the same as the name of S, and the age of P should be the same as the age of S. Now the subtle point here, which is the subtle point of the previous slide that this is illustrating, is, well, we can see what the schema of S is. S belongs to the students' table, so the schema of S is this schema on the board here. It's a tuple with four components: matriculation number, name, age, and email. But the query itself does not seem to specify what the schema of P is. We don't say P belongs to some particular table. We're just saying we want a tuple P, and it must satisfy these properties. But the fact that we've given these two properties that means that we know that the tuple P must have a name field and it must have an age field. And the subtle point is that what one takes as the schema of the resulting tuple here is that you take the smallest schema that is allowable given what you say in the query. So the smallest schema here is that P, and you might write this down. So in this case, the variable P has the schema of name and age. Because those are just the two components that we're giving it. So you can read this informally, and you might jot down the informal reading as this query. You could write it as return the names and ages of those students whose age is strictly greater than 20. Right, so now we're going to just go through a series of examples comparing tuple relational calculus with relational algebra, and to see the difference in style between the procedural style of relational algebra and the declarative style of tuple relational calculus. And I'm probably not going to do all of them in detail. I'll just do enough to give you the key points that you really need to take away from the lecture. So the first one is find the name of students who are taking Informatics 1. So let's look at it in tuple relational calculus first, because I think what I'm going to try to convince you in this lecture is that tuple relational calculus is the easier one to understand. There's this declarative one. We say this is the information we want to get, and that's the information we get back. So we're saying we want to find the names of the students who are taking Informatics 1. So we're asking for those tuples. We have to write it in this form. We're asking for some tuples P, but we only want the name, because that's all we're asking for. So we just need P to have a name, and so following the subtle point just before, we need to say that P has a name field, so we do that. And we say, well, P's name field, well, it needs to be a name of a student, so it must coincide with the name field of some student S. But we want to find those students who take Informatics 1, so once we've got the tuple S, whose name is the same as P, the matriculation number of that student must coincide with the matriculation number in the takes relationship, where that takes relationship is relating that student to the course Informatics 1. So that takes tuple, its code, must coincide with the code of the course whose name is Informatics 1. So we need three pieces of information in addition to P to get this chain of reasoning. We need the tuple S from the students table, whose name is P.name. In the end, we need the tuple C from the courses table, whose course name is going to be Informatics 1, and we need the tuple T from the takes table that tells us that the student we're looking at indeed takes the course Informatics 1. So we say it's okay to return a student named P, as long as there exists a row in the students table, a row in the takes table, and a row in the courses table that all match up in the relevant way. Okay, and for people who know SQL, and we're going to look at SQL in the next lecture, for people who know SQL, you will see, hopefully, that this is not so different from saying select p.name where, and then various things about, we'll look in the next lecture exactly how this corresponds to an SQL query. But in relational algebra, which is closer to the implementation, the query looks like this. And you see how this bow tie symbol for the join is very prominent here. So we've got two bow tie symbols here. So this is one way of writing the query. I'm not actually going to look at that one, because another way of writing the query is on the next slide. We which is pretty much the same, except I've re-bracketed the expression. You can have a look at how the two compare offline. We won't do that in the lecture. And I'm going to take you through this expression in order to explain how one can help to how you can understand a query in relational algebra using what's called an abstract syntax tree. So this is just a way of writing the expression in relational algebra as a tree. So notice the expression in relational algebra here is the outside operation. This is the one that we apply last, is a projection. We're projecting on the student's name of a big complicated expression that we formed by combining this table here with this table here, where, again, this one is itself a complicated expression using a join, and this one here is on the right-hand side of this join. Well, so it's a bit complicated, but you see how the outside operation corresponds to the root of the tree. We go down to then the next highest operation is the one with the next precedence in terms of the bracketing. That's this join here, which corresponds to that. And then inside, we've got this join here corresponds to this, and this selection here corresponds to this, and then we've got the input tables at the bottom. And in order to evaluate this, relational algebra or the system will evaluate this by starting with the leaves of the tree, which are our input tables, and going up the tree and constructing the corresponding tables. And I'm going to just show how that's done. But I'm going to give a variation of this. So just for the sake of having a slight variation, I'm going to do a variation of this where instead of using the qualities here on the join, I'm just going to write it as a natural join, because both these joins can be written as natural joins, because notice that the field names we're in both cases equating common field names in the two tables. So what we're doing is we're combining the student's table. So as I say, the implementation will start from the bottom up. We're combining the student's table with the takes table. We're doing just a join here, and because it's an equi-join, we can just write this as student's join with takes. We've got here the courses, so we've got another join here, which we're going to do. Well, sorry, we don't need to. Sorry, this is a bad notation. The point is we're applying an equi-join operation to these two inputs, so we don't need to write the inputs here. They're coming from down below. I'm sorry about that. So here we're doing the selection on the course name is Informatics 1. Here we combine these using another natural join. Natural join. And here we do the projection on the student's name. But I'm going to modify this slightly as we go up, because what I'm just going to do is tell you what the schemas are as we go up. Obviously, I'm not going to compute the whole tables. It depends on the input tables. We do have some examples on the slides. But anyway, I think the most important thing to illustrate is what the schemas are. So here, we're combining students and takes with a natural join. And so that combines those two schemas for students and takes and removes, doesn't put a duplicate of the common field name. So we get here the schema. So I'll put colon and then give the schema. So the schema is matriculation number, so everything from students, name, age, email, followed by everything from takes, but not the matriculation number because that already appears. Code, so we have code and mark. Here we've got the courses table. The schema of a selection is just the same as the schema of its argument. So the courses table is code, name, and year. And now here, there's another natural join. So again, it joins these two tables, but removes any common field name. And in this case, the common field name here is Right. So actually, I realised I didn't prepare this enough. We can't do a natural join here because the name field appears in both places but has different types, because this is the name of a student and this is a name of a course. So in fact, we better put back that we're just equating here the code. So it's takes.code equals is equal to courses.code. And we'll treat this as an equi-join. And so now the code field doesn't get duplicated. So now we have mn students.name, because that's where it comes from, age, email, code, mark. The code doesn't get duplicated. The name comes from courses and the year. And then finally, I need to go to the top bit here. We project out on the student's name. Can somebody tell me what the resulting schema of that is when we project on this on the name? Sorry?
Just name.
So projection just throws away all the fields except the ones you specify. So here we just get a student. A table with just one field name. Okay. So hopefully it already seems that the tuple relational calculus is a bit easier at expressing these complicated properties compared with the relational algebra. So I'm just going to go rather quickly through these now, because we've actually got all the ingredients, and the examples, in some ways, it would be a bit tedious to consider them all in detail in the lectures. So I just want to pick up on a couple of key points from the examples. So this one here, find the name of all courses taken by Joe. Well, here's the way in relational algebra. I'm not going to go into that in detail. I think I've done enough relational algebra on the board now. Oops. But the way in tuple relational calculus, we're saying it, well, we want to say we want a P, a tuple, which is a name of a student. So again, sorry, now it's the name of a course. So we need to equate it to the course name, which we equate to the takes code, the code of the course to the takes code. And again, the matriculation number of the takes to the student matriculation number. And in the end, we want to say in the student's name is Joe, because we want to find the courses taken by Joe. But this illustrates the sort of subtleties you have to go into in querying a database, because of course what this will return is all courses taken by any student called Joe. So in practice, because as long as the student's name is Joe, it'll return a course taken by it. So if there are several Joes, you'll just get a list of all courses taken by someone called Joe. And that wouldn't be a very useful thing to know in practice. I can't think of any circumstance that you'd really want to know the name of all courses taken by a student called Joe. So you see, in database querying, you have to be careful to write queries in a sensible way that you get the answers you want. So in this case, the right way to do it would be to query the courses taken by a student by referring to the student's student matriculation number, and then making sure that you get the courses taken by the student you're interested in. And the way relational database systems work, so for example, Euclid that the University of Edinburgh has that contains information about students, the way you typically use it is if you don't know a student's matriculation number, you first query the student's name, and it will give you a list of all students that have that name, and sometimes there's more than one. You then look at the individual students to check which is the student that you want on some other information about them that you know, and then once you've got their matriculation number, you ask for the query they want, for example, the courses they're taking. So here's another example of finding the names of all students who take Informatics 1 or Geology. And there's a, I'm not really going to go through that in detail in the lecture. And here's a sort of dual query, very related property, students who take Informatics 1 and Geology. And this is written in relational algebra using an intersection, because to find the students who take Informatics 1 and Geology, it's enough to find those students that take Informatics 1, those students that take Geology, and then just intersect those two tables. But the point I want to make here for the version in tuple relational calculus is this is actually a bad way of writing this query because of this exercise at the bottom. So this is one way, I've written it like this to sort of illustrate some of the subtleties of first order logic, but this is not a sensible way of writing the query, and it's an exercise to do this exercise at the bottom and try and find a better way of writing that query. And the last example is here for a reason. So this is saying, this is again not an example of a practical query that you'd really want to look at. Find the names of all students who are taking all courses. Well, of course, there aren't going to be any students taking all courses in the real world. But anyway, suppose one did want to write a query like that. In tuple relational calculus, you can write it like this. And this is a malicious exercise. It says, try to write it in relational algebra. Well, it can be done if you know enough about relational algebra, but it's not really a very sensible thing to try to do. So that I think you should write in your notes that, I mean, basically, provocative exercise or something. This is not an exercise really to be carried out seriously. But the reason I've raised this as an exercise is because it can be written in relational algebra because of the following result, which was Codd's main result in his first paper on relational databases, which is the expressivity of relational algebra is the same as the expressivity of tuple relational calculus. Okay, that's a nice result. It's a nice result because we have, on the one hand, this procedural way of implementing queries, relational algebra, and on the other hand, this declarative way of writing queries saying this is the information we want to get. And why that's useful is that it's really used in database applications. So tuple relational calculus corresponds quite closely to SQL. I mean, SQL also has some of the operations of relational algebra in them, but the basics of SQL is quite close to tuple relational calculus. But the implementation of SQL is based on relational algebra. And the way that one goes from the query one writes to the implementation is by the SQL system translating your query into relational algebra and then executing it. And in doing that, something called query optimization takes place, which means that the system tries to evaluate your query as efficiently as possible. And the framework of relational algebra is the framework within which all the query optimizations that are actually used in practice has been developed. So these two, so whereas nowadays the technology that one uses is SQL, I mean, as a user of databases, one uses SQL. But still, the tuple relational calculus was one of the design, was really very influential in the design of SQL, and relational algebra is really used in the implementation of SQL to make the efficient, the way that one evaluate, that the SQL system evaluates queries efficient. Okay, are there any questions on that? So I think the exercises are for going through in your own time. On Friday's lecture, we're going to look at SQL, and that's going to be the last lecture on structured data.
Can I ask a question? This is about the procedure of renaming for making a cross-border table.
Do you mind if I just wipe the board right here?
So what it's doing is, oh sorry, that's right here. Right, so here it renames the fields of S, of S1, right? But then when you form the cross product, the new names of S1 go into here, and the new name and the old names can be linking to R, to R going here. So you're propagating through, you get the new names of S1, and you're propagating through into
So we're renaming in general.
Well, we rename here, but then it propagates through when you apply operations.
But it was Friday anyway, so it was actually Friday the week before last.
Okay.